Mr. A.W. Masters, reel 2.
From the time that you actually were there, you talked to just the Marine Sergeant or the Coast Guard officer who had no official authority to go to actually send you to London. He had to advise
authorities, and then they sent back.
Did they call in references or ask for character?
Oh yes.
Things. Who did they ask for that?
Well, anybody who could supply. You see, anybody who, such as, let's say, Sunday school superintendent or the employer, if you'd had one. And it was quite a common thing in those days for kids to have had an employer, you see. You had to get somebody of integrity to whom they could refer, as would be the case today.
And what about parents' permission? What about mother's permission?
It wasn't necessary, you see. If you were over 15, it was okay to go.
And mother, by the time, I mean, you said she wasn't happy about it, and we've said she didn't want you to go away or to lose you. Was she a widow by that time? Is that what you meant? She was a widow?
Yes, I wasn't certain.
And in this situation, she didn't force her hand. I mean, she...
No.
Once you had made up your mind.
Yes, quite happy then. That was okay. Lovely.
Were you happy to get away? It wasn't happy to get away from home, was it?
But it was to embark on a life of my own, you see, without any knowledge of what I was coming up against. And, well, at that age, you've got no knowledge of the world. You don't know anything at all about it. But, of course, it was always impressed. I mean, even at school in those days, you always looked upon the Navy as a highly disciplined service. I mean, you didn't have any idea of the pros and cons of what you was likely to come up against any more than any other youngster. But if it was the life you wanted, make the life suit you.
And people knew that the Navy was high disciplined service.
Oh, yes.
What did they think about the Navy? I mean, a boy like yourself and other boys, what was their, shall we call it, perception of the Navy at that time?
It was a man's service. You see, and although he was going to embark as a youngster, you would learn to become a man. And in so doing, you'd be able to look after yourself. You see, because, I mean, after all, life in any sphere is what you make it. And if you're intent on doing something, well, that's a different matter altogether. Because if people are going to be reluctant to join, and in those days, of course, there was no such thing as being pushed before the First War. You see, the Navy was very large, and there was a progress, well, it was still going on even then, from the old sail through the then modern steamship, you see, and the big guns and what have you, and the travel was the main thing. And
how important, actually, in this context was security? I mean, the fact that you got a bit of travel and your bed and your board and a bit of... Was security at that time an important part?
Well, it was, but a totally different meaning to the word of what we know today.
What meaning?
Well, security today savors of locks, bolts and bars, and you can and you can't do this and that and the other. Life was much easier in those days. And the thing was, as I say, there was still the impression, and that was borne on for years after I'd joined the Navy. You're told to do a thing by somebody senior in age or experience, you did it without question. And in so doing, you learned from the day you got there. You see, it was education as well as gaining of experience.
And this was the security of this, and this was the knowledge that you knew where you were, or knew who you
Well,
were?
You see, the point is, the other aspect of security was security of tenure, if you like. You see, you're entering a life which you know, in those days, you signed on for 12 years from the age of 18, regardless of how many years you'd got to go to achieve 18. But you knew, providing all things were equal, you was going to be there till you was 30. Then you'd be a mature man, so that you could make up your mind, and providing no conditions allowed, you could proceed or go back to civil life.
Just... You said also, I think, that in discussing the Navy, that it was a service you could be proud of. You said that people were proud to serve in the Navy.
Yes.
The difference between that and the Army, what was the difference that people...
Well, I don't know what the difference was, but it was always looked upon as, in the Navy, you was men growing up in a community together, you see. For instance, in a ship's company, the larger the ship, the bigger the community. But you'd be together for two and a half, 3 years. The Army, you was one of a unit which was being shuffled from here to there, and with no sort of common entity about it, which may or not be the case, but that was the impression we gained.
And how important a component in people's decisions was patriotism? Did that play a big part? How important in your own case?
Well, of course, in those days we looked at life vastly different to what it is today. I mean, the establishment, as we now call it, was the very important thing, and of course the landed gentry of those days. There was quite a lot of the old-fashioned touching forelock business, you know, amongst the, we say, the agricultural people. But life at sea, you knew you was working with officers according to their rank and seniority, which meant that they were experienced in all the things that were required. And that experience was only gained by actually serving with them. I mean, you came across some of them who were real tartars from a disciplinary point. The majority were we'd say they came of gentle families. They were gentlemen. And, I mean, it is possible to combine the two, although, of course, in the old days, the life was very, very strict. And the thing that was impressed right from the word go was implicit obedience, because very often the instant obedience to an order was a means of saving life.
This is what you presumably first encountered when you went to Victoria from Rye that day. Tell me about that.
Well, the first thing I encountered was I think there were four of us got in this train. I wouldn't be sure of that now, but I know we got to Victoria and we was met by a huge sergeant of Marines. He was on the recruiting staff, and to us he was, well, like for a bloke from another world. But anyway, he just simply said, right, follow me, which we did, and we got to Old Scotland Yard, and we never saw him again, but we went through the procedure there, which of course started off with a very, very strict medical examination.
You hadn't had a medical examination?
Oh, yes.
You had one?
Yes, yes, that lid. But once you got into the recruiting office in London, or anywhere else as far as that goes, you got what afterwards turned out to be the naval standard required, which was 100%. And
quite a few were put...
Oh, yes. You see, although there was a large number employed, then there was a large number of applicants. There was quite a large percentage didn't make the grade. Because in those days, I forget just what the standard was, but of course the dental standard, as we know it today, didn't exist either. But if a boy was lacking so many teeth, he failed. If he had amateur, he failed. But the main thing, all the way along the line, providing he was structurally all right elsewhere, was eyesight. And the strong point was colourblind.
And they tested you for
colour vision. Oh, you went right through the lot. And if you came out the other end okay, right, then you was on your way. But as I say, with any failure, and colour blindness was the thing that was absolutely out, because you can quite easily understand that life at sea, especially with ships, the indication or the position of a ship is shown by different coloured lights, and you've got to be able to distinguish who from which at, we say, horizon distance. And there was just no room. for the people with bad eyesight. You see, in those days, unlike today, there was no such thing as glasses anywhere. Nobody wore spectacles, except sometimes the senior administrative officers, such as pay commanders, secretaries, that sort of thing. But even officers didn't wear them.
And the other part of the examination then, apart from the physical fitness and the eyesight, was, of course, the educational. How significant was that?
Oh, very. Very, because you was given a preliminary examination on, first of all, going to the Coast Guard station. You was given another one in Old Scotland Yard.
What did it comprise, in fact?
Well, that I wouldn't recall with too great a degree of accuracy, but, of course, there was the strict observance of the 3 hours. And you had to be able to write naturally, and your ability to spell, and of course reading was also essential. And the whole thing boiled down to the fact that you had to uphold the standard required as set by their paper. But, of course, that followed on afterwards, because having already got out of that, see, by the time we got to the training establishment, wherever that might be, you was immediately then in the Navy, and you was very strongly impressed. Now you start.
But until this time, of course, you're still joining. Would you say, basically, I think, in fact, we did say, indeed, that everybody who joined the Navy could read and write and
definitely
was physically fit. This
definitely
is what they sought out.
Yes.
You arrived there with some other boys from Rye. They gathered together.
Only from Rye, from all over the country, anywhere.
Mm. And you met at Victoria. What were the others like? Were they boys like yourself?
Well, old seminary, yes.
Were they, would you say, poor boys?
Not necessarily. No. I mean, some came from better homes, some from worse. But, I mean, it wasn't a case of sweeping the gutters or get out the beggar boys or anything of that. Oh, no. You see, the boys themselves had to have sufficient initiative to go. And, I mean, that, I think, sort of levels out the standard of education.
And the interesting thing, the nice story anyway, you told me, when you were leaving at Rye Station, an old man was on the platform. Tell me about the old man again, that he said something to you.
Yes, that particular morning, yes, this old boy, as a matter of fact, I was talking to his grandson one day last week, because I didn't know anything about that. And he said, to the effect of, "Where are you going, boy?" "Well, I said, join the Navy." "Join the Navy? Why?" "Oh," I said, "I want to." "Well," he said, "you know, a lot of ships are lost at sea." I said, "Yeah." "I said, a lot of people are killed too in trains." "Well," he said, "the only thing I can wish you, my boy," he said, "is the best of luck." He said, "and the Navy is the service you should be in." Yeah, I mean, it was just an unnecessary, unwarranted pat on the back, but it's a thing I never forgot. And that was the general attitude amongst people in those days, which I saw proved times without number afterwards.
The Navy was the place for,
if you wanted to become a man.
Men, yes. Mm. You could get on and grow up.
It was up to you. That was the answer. You see, the point was, the experience was there, and providing you was willing to follow the observations of the service, everything was done to assist.
And during this whole process at New Scotland Yard, you were still actually joining the Navy.
Yes.
You hadn't really been accepted yet.
No.
When did you finally become accepted?
When you left there for the training establishment, whichever you was destined to go to.
What did they say to you when you actually, when they passed you physically fit and stamped you?
Well,
did they say anything?
That I couldn't recall the actual wording, of course, but it was to the effect that now you meet the standard required, you'll be signed on. Is that all right? now you'll be required to join and assign for your career, you see. And then you was given the documents, and that was that.
And technically you're now a sailor on your way to
your... He was on your way, yeah.
What happened? You were